So you've got to be fifth level to use that as a paladin. Like you've got to.
Sorry, you get 5 points per paladin level.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Never mind. But still, you need a first level paladin. Nope. Yeah, first level. But.
Live from the Mundangerous Spawning Stone in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 246 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're continuing our series on iconic monsters and talking about how to use Slotty in your game. But first, the party reconnects with a piece of the past in the Gates of Morning campaign. And later, the Toad Battler stalks the churning mayhem of Limbo in the Character Creation Forge.
Are you looking for a great story? Do you love Star Wars? Do you like podcasts?
If you said yes to any of these, check out the Redemption Podcast.
Well, I have less in my head than you do normally, probably.
You haven't met the crew I'm with. Pretty much everywhere we go, our life is in danger.
Things didn't explode. That's pretty sneaky for us.
That sounds horrible.
Yes, please finish up whatever underhanded thing you're doing on the computer terminals at the Jedi Temple.
Check out Redemption Podcast at www.redemptionpodcast.com.
Hey, so Shane, sometimes we show up on other shows.
We do that from time to time.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why anyone asks us to.
But they keep doing it, so we keep showing up.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate it very much. And these days, you can find us Friday nights at twitch.tv/godsfall, where we are playing Castle Amber.
Castle Amber is a module from the early 80s.
Very early 80s.
That has some eccentricities.
So Aram Vartian from God's Fall is the GM. He's running us through it along with Sally from the Struggle Bus, whom you might have seen from our own Band of Blades stream, as well as Dylan, who I just found out is a physicist?
A physicist. The physicist, okay, cool. Dylan.
A Canadian physicist.
Right.
He's just checking boxes.
Right. So, yeah. So, we are playing through this module. It is GM'd by Aram. And we've got a fun little group of characters making our way through an absolutely insane module. Just imagining having to play this in, like, original AD&D, not even second edition. Like I get frustrated even imagining it, but it's very fun in fifth edition.
Yeah, we're playing wacky characters in a wacky scenario. I can imagine, though, back in the day, there are probably three or four things that we have, like, touched in this castle that would have immediately murdered us. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Right? Oh, yeah.
The hallway full of darkness. I never would have gone anywhere near that in, like,
right,
first edition. Anyway, right. So it's super fun. Fridays, 7 p.m. Eastern, most likely. I don't think that's going to change in the future, probably for the next three-ish weeks.
Yep, at twitch.tv/godsfall. So, Ishan, where are we in the Gates of Morning campaign?
So the Gates of Morning campaign is our 5th edition D&D game set in Eberron, a sequel of sorts to the original Morning Glory campaign. And in central Karnath, in the insular city of Vedekir, the party is chasing a killer. So after deciding to get answers about their very strange deaths on the Day of Mourning 4 years ago, the party has gained entry to the ancestral enclave of House Jurasco, the halfling dragon-marked House of Healing.
So it's a sprawling compound, and most of the buildings are low, single-story. A lot of them have, like, open sides, you know, almost more like gazebos than full-on buildings. They're filled with soft cushions and flowing curtains, and there's the occasional patient wrapped in bandages who's resting or convalescing. And, you know, we've got, like, these nice bubbling fountains to, like, calm you and help you recover, kind of dotting the campus.
Further into the enclave, as they're escorted deeper in, the buildings become sturdier and more populated. There are small groups who are gathering for tea or gentle exercises. And in the distance, the party can see what look like might be steam pools for relaxing. So the party is led to a small waiting room, and after a few minutes, Wilmo appears. The elderly halfling is just as grumpy as they remember her from on the day of mourning when they first met her, when she gave them refuge at a Jurassico compound before they all died, exactly when Seer was destroyed.
She denies any knowledge of any enclave, and we are able to kind of quickly figure out that that enclave is supposed to be a secret.
She has no idea what you are talking about, and how dare you insinuate?
Yeah, so she doth protest too much. And Vesicod, the Kalishtar, attempts to suggest that she cooperate with us, but she shakes him off. So instead, Bramble tells her an enthralling tale of how his life was saved by a brave soldier during the war. And now, under the Shifter's sway, she invites the party to dine with her.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that Bramble, the Shifter Bard, used his Glamour Bard ability, where he just needs to talk to somebody for a minute, and then they make a save, and if they fail that, then they're basically enthralled by him. Like, they sort of idolize him, like almost like a celebrity, for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like full-on mind control, but hey, you know, she wants to have dinner with everyone now.
Right.
So she leads everyone to a small dining hall deeper in the compound, sometimes used for heroes' feasts. And they eat and drink, and she drinks and she drinks, and she falls deeper and deeper into her cups, and she gets a little more chatty.
And Decimus surreptitiously checks for scars on her body, but finds that she does not have any.
Yeah, unlike the party, who have all been previously vivisected. So she gets to talking, and, you know, she finally sort of like seems to level with them a bit. She says, she admits, you know, their deaths were unusual, right? The party's death, her death, because of course she died on the same day. There were unknown energies from the day of mourning, because, you know, it was right on the border with Seer, and they seemed to combine with all of these noxious fumes and elemental discharges that were being released from the ground when the compound was destroyed. Because, it turns out, go figure, the enclave where they died was actually a secret Jurassico research facility. And she speculates that some of the experiments they were working on must have reacted violently.
She becomes reticent, but naturally the party pushes for more information, and she ends up admitting that she has been changed since her resurrection. She's not fallen ill, and she asks if the party has had any, you know, suffered any diseases, any colds, any flus, and none of us have.
Yeah, for the first time, they all sort of think back and realize that they haven't gotten sick in the last 4 years. Although Switch, the paladin, is protected by the divine blessing of the traveler. But yeah, nothing that they can remember. No contagious diseases, nothing that might make them fall ill on their own. Wilmo also claims, though, that, you know, as she's looking down at her basically like eighth glass of wine, that no matter how much she drinks, she has discovered, it won't kill her.
And before she can explain what she means by that, she discovers the remains of poison, sediment at the bottom of her glass.
But if that wasn't enough, just then two arrows pierce the paper wall of the dining hall, and one hits Wilmo right in the chest, sending her crashing to the ground.
And we'll find out what happens next week.
So this week, in the third installment of our new-ish series on how to use iconic monsters in your games, we're talking about Slod, or Sloddy, I guess. I don't know. Slod has better SEO.
Yeah, I like Slod as the as like just the group term, even though I know Sloddy is technically what you call multiple slods. It just feels weird.
Yes, you will bow before the might of the Slod, but there are three Sloddy over there.
Exactly, yeah. Cool, so, okay. Like, I think Slod is a collective, but, you know, Sloddy is the plural.
Works for me.
Okay, well, let's go with that, because I like it better. Anyway, so, yeah, so we're continuing the series. We've talked about devils and dragons. This is the first time that we're talking about a monster that was created for D&D by D&D, and is actually still owned by Wizards of the Coast. Like, they have the copyright on this.
Yeah, for D&D by D&D, you know, for da-da-ba-da-da.
Yeah, right.
All right, so the Slod date back to the Fiend Folio, and they were created, like many D&D monsters, based on a Lovecraftian fever dream from the creator.
Literally a fever dream. from the creator claims to, again, according to Wikipedia, claims to not have read Lovecraft until afterwards, but similar theme.
I mean, we've all had those dreams before.
Right. So they were, Slod were originally intended to be these sort of menacing beings that embodied pure chaos and entropy, right? Like kind of that unfeeling, the unfeeling just destruction of everything falling apart. But the early art for them, like a lot of D&D monsters, made them look like bipedal toads. So they were kind of a joke. Like they weren't scary. They were goofy.
Yeah, you got this a lot when you were looking through, like, you know, very old monster manuals where, you know, you basically had, like, photocopied art ripped from, you know, some mythology book or, you know, something scribbled by a person. Like, the original Bugbear art looks pretty ridiculous and silly.
Real bad, yeah.
But, yes, the Slod sort of gets saddled with this, like, silliness, right? Because, oh, they're chaos incarnate, and that's supposed to be terrifying, right? But in the old days, like, they almost come across as like tricksters a bit. And, you know, the idea of like a bipedal toad monster isn't all that out of the ordinary, right? Like there are tons of bipedal pick your animal monsters that are supposed to be scary and then just kind of look weird and dumb.
Right, right. Yeah. It's like if you look at Grung today, you know, it's like, oh, they're cute. I mean, they're a little scary because they use poison darts and they're, you know, tree frog people. But like, I mean, you don't introduce Grung if you want everybody to be shaking in their boots, right? Like, Grung are the cute enemy that you have to deal with, not the terrifying one.
Right. I feel like this is the kind of thing that led to, like, Tucker's Kobolds back in the day, where you were like, these are supposed to be scary, like, tiny dragons, or, like, lizard people who eat you, but nobody's afraid of them, so I will make them murderous.
Right, right. Anyway, so, as usual, Planescape saves the day for the Slod.
Of course.
It leans into making them frightening and chaotic. It kind of gives them that more like gruesome visage of Toad rather than the sort of goofy one. And that's the version that still persists today.
Yeah, Planescape needed an enemy race that was based on chaos because alignment is so important in that setting.
Right.
And I don't know, I can't really think of any like other iconic, evil, purely chaos creatures.
So now in 5th edition, they have a little bit of an updated origin story. So the basis is Primus, the Modron deity of pure order, cast a geometric stone of pure order into the plane of chaos limbo with the intent of, I don't know, fixing it? It's a little unclear, but what it allowed was for lawful creatures like Gith and Modrons to enter Limbo and create their own enclaves, basically to colonize Limbo.
Of course, the pure chaos of Limbo doesn't like this and sort of responds, and the stone begins also spawning chaos abominations, including the Slod.
Yeah, so it's like an immune response from Limbo. Like, you try to inject me with order, you get Slod.
That's how you get Slod.
Right.
Cleaning up too much.
And I think what this does is it explains how you have these creatures that are meant to be pure chaos who also have this very regimented hierarchy and reproduction cycle that, like, is very, like, sequential and ordered, right? So this is sort of that explanation of they were birthed out of the spawning stone, not necessarily, like, fully chaotic at the time.
Yeah, they're like chaos's interpretation of what order would look like.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because probably as much as your traditional like chromatic dragons, you can tell what a Slod is like, what its abilities are, and what it's going to try to do and like its personality based on what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they have completely different physiology. Mostly based on color.
So if you're colorblind, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Red-green colorblind particularly.
So in 5th edition, the challenge ratings range from 5 red Slods all the way up to 10 death Slods, which make them a really good enemy for like a tier 2 party.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that can easily feature for that second tier 2 arc of your campaign.
All right, so let's talk about Slotty physiology. So like we said, they are bipedal monstrous toads, at least when they're in Slod form. But all Slods are also shape changers who can revert to the shape of the humanoid that originally spawned them.
They are also extremely hardy. It's not easy to survive in Limbo. So to help them, they have several elemental resistances. They have magic resistance, and then they also have innate regeneration.
Yeah, they're just super hard to kill if you don't know what you're doing.
Right. And they're all physically capable. Even like, you know, the green slot, who are the spellcasters, tend to be pretty strong, like at least as strong as a relatively decent human. But they're also mostly fairly dumb. Death and Gray Slotty are intelligent and devious, but Red and Blue Slot are simple-minded agents of chaos. They're there to reproduce and occasionally just fight each other anyway.
All right, so speaking of reproduction, we've already mentioned the humanoid who spawned them. Let's get into that a little bit. Yeah. Because this is the thing that like makes them, or can make them, terrifying and introduce an element of body horror into the slot.
Yeah, so not only are they color-coded toad people, but the red slot, the lowest form of slot, infects new hosts by injecting an egg into a wound that they make with their claws. That egg, over a period of a month, 3 months maybe, grows into either a blue or green slot. Then what happens is the egg matures, eats its way out of the host, and explodes out of their chest, not unlike the horrible abomination from a movie franchise you might have heard of.
that has a new RPG out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is scary, because like, this is CR5, right? So, you know, you're relatively low-level adventuring party can encounter these things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like your average village isn't probably going to run into a slot, but if they did, like they're all dead.
Right.
Easily. Because it doesn't need to bite you, right? There isn't some sort of like strange infection vector. It just needs to scratch you with a claw. And when it does that, like you make a saving throw, and if you fail that, you got eggs in you now.
Right.
And those things are growing, and they are very difficult to get rid of. Like you need magic to get rid of these things.
Yep, it's a disease. So treat that. You've got a 3-month timer.
Make friends with your local paladin.
Right.
So above red, you've got blue, the second lowest slot on the hierarchy. They infect new hosts by infecting them with a chaos phage.
Yeah, so they have these little like hooks on the back of their claws, like on the back of their hands, that inject basically like a poison. That gives you chaos phage. Over the course of a few days, you will probably die and give birth to a red slot, because it reduces your maximum hit points every 24 hours and prevents you from gaining hit points. So when you die, there comes a red slot.
So think about this. They basically reproduce through disease, essentially. But I also kind of think of, to use the antibody analogy again, like that slot in general are also like a disease, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You put a single slot in a city and a red or a blue infects a person. That person then dies and turns into another one of these things and then goes out and infects more of them. Like you can, and it's a magical disease, and it doesn't necessarily present as something obvious. So you have these people just like lingering on, wandering around, maybe even going about their business as an advisor to the king or whatever. And then suddenly, like from their chest or like wholesale, they transform into a freaking full-grown evil slod.
Right. Well, a chaotic slod.
Okay, yes, sure. In the middle of a city, I'll say they're basically the same thing.
So the next slot in the hierarchy are green slot. These are the magic slot. And they are born either from red or blue, who infect a humanoid who has spellcasting levels. So if you're a third level spellcaster or higher, and you are infected by a red or blue slot, instead of the opposite color, they produce a green slot. And these are the ones that begin to actually become intelligent, right? Because they're spellcasters. So not only are they more dangerous, they're also more devious. And they have a goal. Like, their goal isn't just to reproduce, because above greens in the hierarchy are gray slod, who are truly powerful, truly dangerous, and also just the green slod who survive become gray.
So you remember when I told you that if you've been infected by a chaos phage or a slot egg, you should go find that paladin to remove disease? Mm-hmm. You better make sure they remove the disease, because if you turn to a slod, you are infecting that paladin who is going to be a green slod.
Yeah. Well, they're immune to disease, right?
Oh, wait. Is Chaos Phage also technically a disease?
It's a disease, yeah.
Oh, they're all right then. Yes. Keep finding those paladins.
Yeah, find those paladins.
Clerics, though. Clerics are no good.
So, originally, a gray slod was like a transformation that every green slod went through after 100 years. But new canon, it's more random, it's less predictable, so it might be that they need secret knowledge, it might just be the chaos of limbo causes it to happen, but at some point, green slod randomly become gray. Now, what's important here, gray slod have the ability to use plane shift, which means they can easily travel between limbo and the material planes, carrying out plans and orders from their masters, the death slod.
When a gray slod eats the entire corpse of a death slod, they in turn become a death slod.
Don't think for a moment that this means that death slod are like a limited resource in the slod community, because of course they can also be spawned from spawning stones. So, like, whatever. But point being, like, that's where this sort of chaos comes in, right? Is the gray slod are beholden to the death slod, but the death slod, if they're betrayed, get eaten by gray slods and they eat all their power.
I like that these days, you know, there isn't necessarily a canon reason why green becomes gray. You know, you have like set ways for some kinds of slod to become other kinds of slod, but now that it's a little muddled at some of these levels, it means that you can have, you know, slod with goals, mm-hmm. and slod who are planning, and slod who are betraying each other, not just because, hey, we're chaos, but because they actually want to move up in the hierarchy.
Right.
And also that there isn't necessarily a specific way to go about it. There actually might be multiple ways. So you've got these like green slods and maybe even gray slods who are, you know, traveling back and forth between limbo and the material plane and like searching for secret knowledge and maybe like hiring cultists or starting a cult or, you know, even shape changing it back into a humanoid and then hiring adventurers to go out and do things.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
And then at the very top of the hierarchy are the Slod Lords. There are a couple who've been identified in canon. We have Sendum, the Slod Lord of Insanity, and Igoril, the Slod Lord of Entropy.
But hey, if you need more, maybe they also get spawned from the stone too, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe they eat each other or whatever.
Yeah. No worries. I mean, maybe that's the goal of a death slod, is to ascend to a slod lord.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're devious and they have plans, and I guess they're following orders, but maybe Sendum and Igoril are fighting each other too.
Yeah. You know, insanity, fighting against entropy. Huh. What else could it be? So let's talk a little bit about the philosophy of the slod.
Yeah, I think this is important because often slod will show up in a campaign where alignment matters, or you have the great wheel that's used in D&D where, you know, each of these outer planes corresponds to a particular alignment, so it ends up mattering, even if it doesn't necessarily like start off being very important.
Right.
All slod are beings of pure chaos. That doesn't mean that they are all evil, although, you know, pure chaos is probably anathema to most kinds of civilization.
It's certainly not good.
Right.
But they are all chaotic neutral, except for Death Slod, who have an infusion of negative energy and are also sadistic and actually evil.
They're also the ones in charge.
Right. So, you know. but yeah, like their main schemes are to marshal all of the lower slod and drive them towards incursion into other planes, right? To spread chaos, to sow discord. That's sort of the idea.
Right. Like you can't really infect other slods, and you know, the creatures that live on limbo are amorphous and ever changing. It's hard to infect them. You've got to go to the material plane.
Right.
And if your goal is to have more slod, you got to go somewhere where you're not immediately going to get murdered.
Yeah. You know, you can't just rely on slod mating season back at the spawning stone. You know, you got to go out and be fertile.
Yeah. Also, being around a bunch of other slod is a good way to get eaten.
That's true.
All right. So because The Death Slot, the Gray Slot, and the Green Slot can all shape change at will. This means they are excellent at subterfuge and schemes.
Yeah, the Gray Slot are going to be the ones who are most likely to carry them out, as mentioned previously, right? Because they have plane shift. They can go between Limbo and the Material Plane relatively easily. Green Slot are going to more likely be in the plane where they started until they are able to go to Limbo to become Gray Slot.
Which means you can have a bunch of Slot who are basically trapped where they are, right? If you have a Slot incursion and then a bunch of new Slot begin emerging and bursting forth from the local populace, you'll probably have a bunch of red and blue and green Slots who are basically stuck here.
Or a bunch of cultists trying to open a gate to Limbo to get those Slots home.
Or maybe even a bunch of adventurers who are trying to open a gate to Limbo to get the Slot out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, we can't kill them all, but can we flush them down some sort of toilet to Limbo?
It's the Slotty door, you know?
it's the Ghostbusters plot, basically.
Yeah.
We can't kill these ghosts.
And then the other thing about Slot philosophy is, we talk about how they have this ironic order to their reproductive cycle and even their hierarchy. This isn't enforced by some principle of order, right? In the way that an evil empire has order, the way that devils have order amongst their ranks. It's enforced by brute strength, right? It is just the fact that the gray slots are stronger than green slots that they are pressed into service. They will happily betray them at a moment's notice if they have the opportunity.
Which I think adds a nice wrinkle to interactions with Slod if you are a party member who's dealing with them. I think usually they're presented as the big hulking brute who comes in and slashes at you and tries to procreate inside your chest. Which they are.
Yeah, not wrong.
But they also kind of want to screw over their compatriots. They have no problem doing this. So if you can offer them something that will, benefit this particular Slod, there's no loyalty among Slods, really.
Right, except to strength, basically. Right. And then also keep in mind that Red Slod and Blue Slod hate each other, even though they are responsible for each other's continued existence, right? They have that innate drive that tries to procreate, but they don't get along. They don't work together. They're just as likely to attack each other as they are to attack a third party enemy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I guess fortunately for them, they're short-sighted enough that they're not thinking, okay, if I attack this villager, they're going to spawn a different kind of Slod from me.
Right. Yeah.
They're just oh, I love attacking villagers. This is great.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why, but I got to do it.
All right, let's talk about a bit of world building and how to fit Slod in your setting. Because I think, if you're running Planescape, they're going to show up. But if you're doing Forgotten Realms, you've really got to think about how and why they're going to fit in the setting.
Yeah, so they are most likely going to be outsiders. And it's a question of why are they here, right? Are they visiting? Are they colonizing? Is it for some acute purpose or some broader purpose? Are they trying to destroy the world and introduce chaos and entropy, or are they trying to maybe reproduce to do something else?
Right, there are other creatures that you can use for subterfuge who are pretending to be locals, Yuan-Ti or something like that, and they build entire societies and live just beneath the surface, infiltrating society for generations. They're gene stealers, that is not Slod.
Yeah, no.
The Slod can infiltrate, but it's probably not going to be a long-term thing. They're here for probably a short-term reason. But think about what is the scheme and what is the scale of that scheme? Is this just a regular Slod incursion and we're going to take over this whole city and kill everything in it? Ha 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 ha. Or is it part of a grander scheme that is either being manipulated by a Death Slod or maybe not a Slod?
Right.
Are we talking evil wizards here?
Right, right.
That often seems pretty likely.
Yeah. if you find a way to bind a Slod, right, to get the control stone of a Death Slod, something that we'll talk about in just a few moments, maybe you are using them for that purpose, right? You're using them as agent provocateurs. Agents provocateur. And then consider if they're going to be a major villain on their own, or perhaps a convenient foil, or, you know, like you said, being used as the henchman of the major villain. You know, like, is this the end of the plot for your arc, or are they part of something bigger?
Yeah, like we said earlier, you know, they're good tier two monsters because, you know, they're going to wipe low-level parties. But at higher levels, they're relatively easy to deal with, especially once you have ways to handle disease pretty simply. Mm-hmm. But remember, you know, you have death slots, and then you can also level them up. You can give them their own character levels, additional XP. But yes, probably the easier thing to do is to either reskin higher level monsters or just have them continue to be high level henchmen who are still very dangerous when there are many of them.
Right. And then, of course, in your setting or in your game, they have thematic uses. Obviously, they are associated with chaos and entropy and sort of the destruction of anything lawful and orderly.
Right. If they're a slot in this location, then there's some tie to those sorts of themes or an aura of that in this place, right? Like they're not going to be able to like survive long enough in a place or want to stay long enough in a place that doesn't feel that way. There are also basically harbingers of disease. They might show up where disease is prevalent. They might be the root cause of that disease.
Or they might, you know, follow in the wake of other diseases in order to kind of hide themselves, right? While you're treating the plague, you're also unwittingly giving fertile breeding grounds to the slot.
Right. Or, you know, walking around like a healer. And yeah, right. maybe you're fixing broken legs and, you know, curing the influenza, but you're also infecting people with chaos phages.
Right.
And in 3 months, you're going to have a problem.
And then they can also be, you know, imposters. They can sow distrust and discord, like sort of leading to the insanity that can result when you can't trust anybody in an otherwise orderly society.
Yeah, I actually like this a lot. I think most people forget that Slod can shape change. And so once you're like, all right, I think we're dealing with shape changers. You know, people are doing things that don't seem like they would do. Are we dealing with doppelgangers here? That'll be difficult. They can read minds. Is it a Rakshasa? That would be terrible. And then the reveal is, oh no.
Yeah.
I was hoping it wasn't Slod.
It's actually worse because it's not just one.
Right. It's never just one.
Like, I thought I was dealing with an imposter. I'm dealing with a whole race of imposters. So let's talk about how you use Slod as NPCs.
I very rarely see this, and I would like to see it more because, sure, you're probably not spending a lot of time with a recurring red or blue slot NPC, but a death slot has goals and it has motivations and it has things you might want.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of the fact that you don't see them very often is that they're not super common in canon fiction either, you know? So it's very possible that like they're seen as boogeymen, right? Like a PC who deeply believes or feels immediately threatened or sounds the alarm of Slod might just be like laughed at or ostracized for those beliefs. Like,
yeah,
like
it's crazy.
You're the crazy person. Like, yeah. Slod aren't real. They're children's stories. Like, sure, red, blue, green. Okay, yeah, we all know.
Oh, a big toad monster, huh?
Yeah.
And even if confronted with actual visual evidence, a person who sees a Slod tadpole may have no idea what's going on or what it is.
Yeah, you might see a Slod tadpole burst out of the chest of your best friend and still not know that Slod are involved.
Yeah, that's a mind flayer, right? That's what's going on here. Yeah,
exactly. Like the misidentification of Slod is also probably a problem.
I would actually love to spring these on maybe relatively new players or players who don't have like a long history with D&D but may have played other games. You know, it's nice to be able to actually run a real mystery, like horror mystery, where they're presented with all this evidence, but, you know, you can't reach into mythology and be like, oh, we're dealing with a basilisk, right?
Right.
When a person is obviously has been turned into a statue or these other like creatures of myth. If you don't already know Slod, then they are terrifyingly unknown. Like, what the hell could their capabilities possibly be? And even once you meet one, oh, we killed that giant blue toad and we know what they're capable of now. Like,
Meet my green brother.
Right.
Keep in mind that, you know, while red and blue slod are relatively dumb, green slod and the higher ones can be bargained with or used and manipulated. And like gray and death slod will probably trade a little bit of chaos now for a lot of discord later. Like they can be manipulated and bargained with just straight up. You know, like don't do this until later in the month when it'll have a bigger effect.
Yeah, or even later in the century, right?
Sure.
Like yeah. If the green slot is like, well, if I wait 100 years and like, you know, keep my head down, I'll be a gray slot. You could certainly have a, you know, conversation where they're like, all right, yeah, I won't kill everybody here. That's fine. But, you know, 200 years from now, you're going to hear from me. Or right. I guess maybe not you. I don't know how long you things live. Usually not long in my experience.
I also think it's interesting if your slod become a tool to undermine maybe a greater threat, right? Like they wouldn't really consider anything a mutual threat, but hey, if there is a big evil empire that's encroaching upon the free lands with its rigid hierarchy and its, you know, rule of law and its, you know, despotic rule, like, yeah, slod might be an ally to just go and sow some discord in their ranks and undermine like the basis of their, you know, sure, tyrannical rule, but still rule.
I love this idea of like the good guys basically arguing about the ethical quandary of like enlisting slod or like releasing slod. This is basically like, do we use biological weapons in war?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, great. If the slod defeat them, we are happy. But if they defeat them too well, then right. We're fighting slod.
Exactly.
I really like the idea of like a fantasy Geneva convention where everyone in the world has decided that we're not releasing slod on each other. Like, there's just not a thing we do. We did that before in the slod purge of 1350.
They actually slid that into the Treaty of Thronehold. It was just like a weird like subsection and everyone was like, yeah, sure, who's going to debate about this? But it's come in handy a couple times, you know?
Right. Right. Karnath was like, I mean, they can't kill our troops.
Right, exactly. We're naturally immune to disease.
And of course, the big thing here is that you can never fully trust the slot. So if you are bargaining with them, if you are working with them in some way, they're going to betray you when it becomes useful for them.
Yeah, or maybe not even when it's useful for them, right? Maybe just because, like, whoops, they woke up on the wrong side of bed that morning, and, like, now they're doing the thing today instead of in a week because, oh, well.
Yeah, like, maybe it's just they had the opportunity, and so they're going to take it.
Right.
Or, like to your point, they don't have the opportunity, and they're going to, you know, run headfirst into your pikemen, sure, but they're also going to kill a bunch of them.
Right,
because, like, I'm chaos.
Or, like, that invasion never comes, right? Like watching you suffer, watching you fall apart. Hey, that's also a form of disorder.
Right. We thought it would be funnier if the evil empire won, actually.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about using them in combat.
I think combat against slod should be a scrum or a swirl of chaos. Things should be difficult to keep a handle on. It should be tough to always like know where everybody is or know what they're going to do next. Their tactics don't necessarily make sense. They are not even necessarily predators because they're not really here for a meal. Lower level slods are just out to reproduce.
Right. And then higher slod want to escape. You know, like it's a they have to live to tell the tale. So they're not fight to the death type creatures. They are probably manipulable in how they select their targets to some degree.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of their combat strengths. First of all, you've got deception, right? Like an infected host might not know it. You've got green, gray, and death slod can all change shape at will. They have access to invisibility. They can be difficult to track down.
Yeah, and they should be doing this in the middle of combat, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Why maintain a single form when you can run behind a tree and look like somebody else or, you know, separate the party and then take one of their shapes?
Right.
They're durable. All of them have good hit points, pretty decent AC, lots of different elemental resistances, and they all regenerate. So if they can just lay low for a little bit, even if they turn into someone who you might consider a friend and just talk it out for a minute, they're basically going to heal themselves fully.
Right. Then in terms of their weaknesses, right, they're relatively simplistic and chaotic. They're likely to target the lawful first, right? Even if that isn't the strongest combatant. They're probably otherwise just going to attack the first available or the first spellcaster available.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, like, they might attack each other. You know, like, there's never a chance that a red slot isn't going to just betray a blue slot.
Yeah, as a GM, you have a lot of levers to pull here to make combat with slots more difficult or to give your party a fighting chance.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they break away into infighting. Maybe like that breather that they need for regeneration is also a breather that your party needs.
Right.
And also, yes, they're going to geek the mage, but there's an in-universe reason why they're going to do that.
Right, exactly. Like, if you hide that you have magic, perhaps they ignore you for a little longer, right?
Mm-hmm. So in terms of tactics, like we said, they will, if given the opportunity and the insight, take down people who are lawful. They hate order. They want to destroy order. Less order in the world is better for them.
Yeah, so if they see somebody giving orders, right, they will probably assume, absent any other evidence, that they are the source of order.
Mm-hmm. And if you've got, you know, a holy symbol of an obviously lawful god on you, they're probably going to hit you, also because you're probably a spellcaster.
Yeah, I mean, they're not geniuses, right? But, like, 7 intelligence is enough to know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially if you are a humanoid, or, like, born of this plane from a humanoid on this plane. Like, it makes sense that they would recognize those symbols. And then absent that, you know, target the NPCs. Like, a PC infected by a slot is in a lot of trouble, and that's going to suddenly become a major plot point that... it's going to be very high risk, right? And it's possible at certain levels when you encounter them, like, you might not actually be able to deal with it, especially a blue slot's chaos phage. But an NPC, like, that's a smaller cost to your story, or at least to your game, perhaps an equal cost to your story.
Yeah, I think that can be actually a lot more interesting. You know, you infect a PC and then it's do or die, right? Like, we absolutely have to figure out how to deal with this egg or this chaos phage, or we're going to lose a party member. If it's an NPC, now maybe you can actually just go quest. You don't have someone who is missing a bunch of hit points. You can find whatever it is you need to heal this person, or it then becomes tension. Is this someone that we have to save? Is this someone that we want to save? If we don't save them, even if we don't want to, are they going to wander off into the world, spawn a slot, and then spawn more slot?
Right, right. And then keep in mind, like, slot make a lot of sense for hit and run tactics. They don't need to kill. They're there to cause disorder, cause mm-hmm. chaos, and reproduce. Right? So while a red or blue slot might die to infect several people, a green or gray slot is just going to escape. Right? Like, once the damage is done, like, they're going to plane shift right out of there. Or, you know, pop invisibility or shape change and go invisible, you know, like, just get out of there any means necessary.
Yeah, this means that any battle with Slod can turn into a Pyrrhic victory and you may not necessarily know it.
Right.
Like, you're like, okay, great. We saved almost everyone or most of the NPCs and, oh, like, a few people got killed and that's tragic, but at least they're not going to turn into Slod. Did the NPC who lived make their saving throw? You don't know that.
Yeah.
Like the PC would know if they made their saving throw, but NPCs, are we going to check everybody to make sure they didn't get scratched? Are these people going to keep it a secret because they don't want to get put down? A lot of them probably will.
Yeah, you have now your zombie tropes, right?
Exactly.
You hide that you were bitten so you can hope to stave off the infection and end up screwing over your community.
Right. Or does a simple villager even know that, like, a simple scratch can mean death in a few months? Or yeah, they're like, that's a flesh wound. I'm okay. I get these all the time on the farm.
Right. That's a good one for some overly boisterous and a little too knowledgeable PCs. Well, you didn't tell them that if they're scratched, they need to be treated.
Right.
So, whoops. They're just backcountry bumpkins. They don't know about the outer planes.
Now, if you do involve a PC, this obviously becomes a much bigger element of your story.
Yes. So one way to do that is to incorporate it into a backstory, right? Maybe they lost a loved one to a slot infection or witnessed the birth of a monster and that has somehow like shaken them or shaped them.
I could even see someone who has a loved one who is currently infected and needs a cure in just a few months, because that's actually something that can happen early on in a campaign where you're like between levels 1 and 3 and you're like trying to figure out how to find a fifth level spellcaster who can cast Remove Disease.
Right.
You might even be that fifth level spellcaster in a couple months.
Yeah. And keep in mind, like paladins can use Lay on Hands to remove it, but it costs 5.
You need a paladin. Paladins are rare. And then, of course, this connection doesn't need to already exist when you create the character. You can introduce it, take someone's important person or an NPC that people have gotten, you know, attached to, and introduce the slot infection element.
Yeah, or some organization that they hold dear, right, that is dedicated to Law and Order also deals with slot. Like, that's a thing that they're aware of. That's a present threat that they have to clock.
I mean, the Harpers know about all of this stuff, right?
Right.
So, you know, they're going to be paying attention to, you know, whatever, a random outbreak in Skullport, and, you know, someone goes to investigate, maybe you, and discovers that, oh no, it's Slod.
Right. Remember, the Harpers know all this stuff. Not every Harper knows this stuff.
Right.
And then in terms of magic and magic items, I mean, I think, remember, Slod targets spellcasters because it improves their reproductive cycle. They don't necessarily kill spellcasters every time. So it's not like they're like dragons, for example, where they're hoarding lots of loot, and just because they like benefit from killing spellcasters, that they're going to get the magic items or anything like that out of them.
Yeah, like it would be better for that green Slod to have those magic items on them when they turn.
Right.
On the flip side, that probably means that if they can identify a paladin, or if they can watch a spellcaster or a cleric heal somebody or cure somebody of a disease, they will murder that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really the only thing that can stop a Slod. It's not being killed yourself, because, you know, the reproduction rate is so high. It's people who can end the infection before it spawns.
Yeah, and end a mass infection before it can be... before it fully spawns.
Now, you mentioned this briefly, but there is a bit of canon about Slod that can be used to manipulate them, the control gems.
Yeah. Any Slod that is born from the spawning stone will have a control gem in their brain. This grants the bearer of the gem control of the Slod whose gem it is. Now, it is more than a little unclear to me how you get this gem out of their brain without killing them. However, there is obviously some high level magic that can do it. So specifically, the imprisonment spell will let you, in as an alternate condition, take the gem from them, or like a wish. And of course, you can destroy the gem with greater restoration, even while it's in the Slod's brain, which will kill the Slod. So that's a thing. If you get one, it's probably going to be a concerted effort to acquire it, right? And then it should kind of give you that benefit.
Yeah. I mean, have a talk with your GM, like do some research and figure out how you could get it out without just killing the Slod. Remember, they have regeneration, right?
Right.
So if you could, I don't know, maybe reduce them to 0 hit points and not kill them outright.
Vivisect them.
Yeah, exactly. You basically just like, you know, cut into the head, take out the gem, and, you know, 30 seconds later, the thing's healed itself.
Yeah. I guess that becomes a question of how many Slod have to die for you to get those control gems, you know?
As many as it takes.
Right. And then the other huge obvious magic item associated with Slod is the spawning stone itself. This is artifact level or beyond even. You know, it's sort of a fundamental basis of the Plane of Limbo, but that could certainly be the impetus for a campaign, or at least the beginning of a campaign, right? Is destroying the spawning stone in Limbo, what would happen?
Right, like, okay, there aren't going to be any more Slod, but that also means there aren't going to be any Gith Zerai monasteries or like Modrons going through Limbo, because they can't exist there anymore. That's why the stone was there in the first place.
Well, most of the Modrons are already dead because the Slod fought back and killed them.
Don't worry, they just pop back up in Primus's home plane. So when I'm planning a campaign, I usually will pick two, maximum three kinds of creatures that are going to feature pretty prominently. And I really like the idea of Slod being one of those monsters that the party basically needs to deal with and become experts on, and experts on fighting for a good chunk of their careers, because there's so many different types, there's so many different ways to interact with them. And there's a really broad range of power levels where you can effectively utilize them.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, we are still in the COVID times, right? So if you want to introduce a little of that theme into your game, social distancing is one way to prevent slot outbreaks. so you could very easily kind of wrap this into sort of a very fantasy overlaid version of dealing with a pandemic and the social cost and challenges that come with it. I could see that being a fair impetus.
Yeah, that evil empire, why didn't it have a slot outbreak? It's because it threw every suspected infected person and their entire families into separate jail cells.
Yeah,
and just waited it out.
Jail cells or funeral pyres?
Depends on how evil.
How evil, yeah, exactly. All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
Does Slod's croak? I hope not, because that's what I'm hearing.
Well, if you're hearing a Slod croak, then we should move on to the character creation fortune. Figure out who's going to cure your Slod problem. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet on the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we're building the Toad Battler. Or, as you've written here, the Battle Toad.
Yeah, you know, do you want it as a noun or a gerund?
That was an impossible video game. I liked it, and then I hated it. All right, so what is a Toad Battler?
A Toad Battler is a Gith Yankee who hunts Slod.
Not a Gith Zerai?
No, mostly because I liked this better to get the weapon proficiency, Ishan.
Okay, works for me. What's the build?
The build is a Gith Yankee, Cleric of Order 17, Vengeance Paladin 3.
So like you said, Gith Yankee gets +2 to Strength, +1 to Intelligence, and proficiency with the short sword, long sword, and of course the great sword and an additional skill.
You also get use of the mage hand cantrip with an invisible hand, the jump and misty step spells once per long rest.
Order cleric 17, you get, you know, all the great cleric spells, hold person, dominate person. You also get a voice of authority. So when you cast a spell on an ally, they can make an attack as a reaction.
Right. This is going to cement you pretty quickly as the source of order in your party.
Yeah. You bring the slots
you face
to you.
Slod. Yeah, exactly. mass healing word. Now all of you attack. you will also get, for your channel divinity, a target will make a wisdom save versus being charmed. Then at level 6, you will get Embodiment of the Law. Wisdom times per day, you can change an enchantment spell from an action to cast to a bonus action.
You get Divine Strike at levels 8 and 14. And then at 17, Order's Wrath. On a hit, you curse a creature and they take 2d8 psychic damage the next time an ally is going to hit them before the end of your next turn. You just do this all the time. So basically, every round, when you hit a creature, curse.
Bingo. And then from Vengeance Paladin, we will get Lay on Hands. Obviously, that will help you cure disease. You will get Divine Smite, which will help you do more damage to those nasty Slod and overcome their resistance. And then you'll get a Fighting Style. Now, depending how frisky you are, this might be a good time for Great Weapon Fighting Style.
Shane, do Slod have resistance to radiant damage?
They do not, Isha.
Ah, well, well. Now, as a paladin, of course, you'll also get divine health, making you immune to disease and immune to getting turned into a Slod yourself.
Right.
Which, of course, just means that they will try to murder you.
Yes, exactly. They will not be hitting it and quitting it, as it were. You also get spells like Bane and Hunter's Mark as a paladin.
And then your channel divinity, you can abjure enemy, which if they fail a saving throw, they are frightened and they cannot move.
But what you're really here for is Vow of Enmity, which grants you advantage on attacks against the target for a minute. So in terms of leveling order, I would start with all of my paladin levels and then take cleric straight through. So you get a nice capstone there at 17 with Order's Wrath.
Mm-hmm.
So Ishin, who is your toad battler?
Okay, I'm going to fix this whole Githyanki Githzerai thing. Toad battler is a Githyanki raised by Githzerai. Now, those of you who know canon may think, that's impossible, that couldn't happen.
Yeah, Ishin, that's impossible, that couldn't happen.
Those two sub-races hate each other. Here's the thing, though. In 5e particularly, they are sub-races of a single race. And if you look at the art throughout history, there's no physical difference between them. It's all cultural and the way that they dress. So a Githzerai monk, calm and serene, focused in on themselves, finds a Githyanki infant in the Astral Sea and decides to adopt them because it is a test. Can I turn a Githyanki into someone who is, you know, calm and stable and you know, follows a righteous path rather than the dictates of the Lich Queen? I guess we'll find out. And here you go. Here's what they turn into. Still violent, still want to destroy things, but now their ire is focused on the Scourge of Limbo.
Got it.
What about your Toad Battler?
Well, so of course, everyone knows that pirates are prone to the occasional ideal streak, and are Githyanki nothing better than Astral Sea pirates?
That's exactly what they are.
Okay. So, from time to time, might a Githyanki pirate captain get it in their head that sometimes, instead of just preying on things in the Astral Sea, they should give back to, you know, kind of privateer, if you will, and fight a greater threat in times of war? So, my Toad Battler is a privateer who is invading Limbo to fight the Slod on a, you know, not a holy mission necessarily, but like a mission for the greater good.
This is going to confuse so many Githzerai monks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're not here to murder us.
Right.
Wait.
It's the thing is, you know, Spain and England were briefly allied, you know?
Yeah, against a greater threat, the French.
Right.
Shane, hear me out. What if your Githyanki captain just has a vendetta against a particular Death Slod who is white? Who once maimed him in a fight.
Okay.
Cool.
Fine.
There's a bard on the ship too who's just writing everything down. This doesn't end well though, this campaign.
Look at that. You know, three character creation forge backstories for the price of two.
You're welcome.
All right. Before we wrap up, let's take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you do so, we will read it on the air. So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We'll be talking about using cults.
And in the Character Creation Forge,
we're building the Deprogrammer.
Well, that's it for episode 246 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishin. Thanks for listening.
Total Party Thrill is also brought to you this week by Kobold Press.
The Kobold Press store offers the full line of 5th edition titles from Tome of Beasts to Guide to Game Design, plus hundreds of adventures, map packs, and more.
Yeah, there are 5e titles available both in print and in PDF or in money-saving bundles.
There are virtual tabletop versions that are available from Roll20 and Fantasy Grounds.
Their orders are still shipping within 24 hours while supplies last. So Ishin, if you want to check out the Midgard campaign setting, or you want to check out Southland's campaign setting, or you want to check out, say, the Tome of Beasts in preparation for Tome of Beasts 2, what would you do?
You'd check it out at koboldpress.com. You know, in my experience, the monsters in Tome of Beasts run a little bit hot. And you know what? I kind of like that because in my experience, the monsters in the 5th edition monster manual run a little bit cold.
Fall a little bit flat, if you will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, hey, if you want to really test your party, pull out Tome of Beasts and see how they fare.
So check that out and everything else at cobaltpress.com and tell them DSPN sent you.